So one of the ways that we often describe experience in some of these meditation trainings is as that we're experiencing inner weather systems. You've heard this before, many of you, that you know the inner weather can be calm and peaceful or turbulent or whatever it is, and that whereas without external weather, we might have our preferences, but we're not hugely reactive. When the inner weather is difficult, we have a really hard time. So one of the big questions on the spiritual path is, or one of the kind of understandings is, it doesn't matter what the weather is. What matters is how are we relating to it? In other words, the given is that we are in these bodies that are going to feel everything from depression and fear to rapture to sadness to anger to whatever. So if these different inner weather systems are going to move through, the level of suffering is directly related to how we're relating to that. And what I'd like to do tonight is focus on a particular and pervasive experience that proliferates into suffering. And that is that when things are unpleasant, we add the idea and the full-blown sense that it's happening to a self and the self is a bad self. This is a proliferation that is so pervasive that I've come to sense it as kind of the primary manifestation of suffering, is that in some way, when the weather systems aren't pleasant, that there's a bad self it's happening to. And so what happens is that, whether it's fear or whatever, what it implicates is a self that either deserves that or is causing that or is the problem. And so I'd like to explore together how this proliferation happens and consider what it means to have a non-proliferation treaty with ourself. And I really mean it, because we are all anguished by the violence on this earth. And we know in our consciousness that we have to find a way to stop the war inside our own being. That doesn't mean we don't do everything wholeheartedly and actively on the planet externally, but we need to be stopping the war. And that proliferation that happens inside us, that lands us up in the story and feeling tone of a not okay self, continues to fuel the war on the earth. So the given is that we keep on retelling ourselves a familiar kind of pattern of story about who we are. And for most of us, we're tracking how we're doing. Most of the time we're tracking how we're doing and in some way nailing ourselves for deficiency. And those of you that have been around for a long time know I have a prayer that's, I think, a terrific prayer that kind of says it all. Dear God, so far today I've done all right. I haven't gossiped, been greedy, been grumpy, nasty, selfish, or overindulgent. I'm very thankful for that. But in a few minutes, God, I'm going to get out of bed. And from then on, I'm probably going to need a lot of help. So we have this constant evaluating going on. And here's the thing. If you're suffering, in those moments, there's going to be a story in some way of a self that's bad. Now, you might have a story more that's fixated on how the world out there is bad, but guaranteed underneath that, there's still a sense of a not okay self. Some years ago, I was teaching at the Insight Meditation Society, and one of the students shared with me her experience with being with her mom during the final days of her mom's life. And on the last day, her mom was drifting in and out of a coma. And at one point, her mother woke up and looked her right in the eyes and said, "You know, all my life, I always thought something was wrong with me." And then she closed her eyes and she drifted some more, and in a few hours she was gone. So those were her last words, kind of. That was my life. That was the way my life was organized. And in a way, it was a parting gift to her daughter. Because, as her daughter put it, she said, it let me know that that was the suffering, but it didn't have to be that way. That I don't have to subscribe to a story of something's wrong with me. And for her, it gave her a real commitment to honoring the life inside and around her, to stopping the war. I sometimes sense that if we each could let that be the center of our spiritual commitment, like right at the center, this non-proliferation, that whatever's going on, that we not lock in to some idea and feeling and belief, I'm bad, something's wrong with me. If that could be the place, the centerpiece of our attention, that every other part of the spiritual path would open. We would become absolutely able to see the goodness in others. We'd be absolutely dedicated to stopping the war on the earth. It's said that the heart of Buddhism is compassion. Is holding tenderly the life that's here and not turning on it. The heart of Buddhism is compassion. And the heart of compassion is compassion towards ourselves. And we're not talking about compassion towards a story of a self. We're talking about compassion to the life, moment to moment, that's being experienced. So let's just look a little on how do we get caught in this proliferation. I talk about it as a trance a lot, because it is. So we spend big chunks of our day living in a story about a self that's smaller than what we are. It might not be a story where we're trashing ourselves in the moment, but in some way there's a sense of a story of a self that needs to do things to be okay and isn't enough and something's missing, and often something's not okay. So in Buddhist psychology and in Western psychology, the dynamics of the proliferation are really described similarly. That we are all constantly having experiences of pleasantness or unpleasantness, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, washing through. And they might come up because somebody looks at us a certain way or doesn't say something or says something, or it might come up because, you know, the stock market just crashed, or it might come up because we didn't do something well at work, or it might come up because we forgot to take our Prozac, or it might come up because we ate something wrong. But this constant change in this psychobiological system we're in. And then what happens when it's pleasant or unpleasant is we immediately start assessing what's causing, what's to blame, how to get more, how to get away from it. That we just go into assessing. And very quickly, this assessing process assigns blame. I am bad. I caused something. I'm doing something wrong. I need to improve. We fixate. The Buddha described it in terms of two arrows. That the first arrow is kind of the inevitable, okay, unpleasant stuff happens. And the second arrow is that we then blame ourselves. And as I mentioned, even when we blame the world, because a lot of you might be thinking, well, I'm mostly kind of judging and blaming others, because a lot of us, that's the first presentation. Underneath that, we don't like ourselves, we feel vulnerable, we feel something's wrong with us still. So it's pervasive in this culture, and I've spoken about that a lot here, because our culture, Western society, is not only are we disconnected from the earth, which really can give us a sense of belonging and not have to jump through quite so many hoops to feel a sense of at home. There's not a natural sense of tribe or community, and in every structure we're in, whether it's school or work, our spiritual communities, there are these standards that have to do with whether or not we're being good. And of course, in our families of origin, every one of us was given these ideas of here's how you need to be, how you need to act or look or achieve or whatever it is in order to be loved and accepted. Every one of us. I like this story. One day a little girl was sitting and watching her mother do the dishes at the kitchen sink, and she suddenly noticed that her mother had several strands of white hair sticking out in contrast on her brunette head. She looked at her mother and inquisitively asked, "Mom, why are some of your hairs white?" Her mother replied, "Well, every time you do something wrong and make me cry or unhappy, one of my hairs turns white." The little girl thought about this revelation for a while and then said, "Mama, how come all of Grandma's hairs are white?" Unfortunately, most of us don't have that resilience. We take the message and we digest it and internalize it and live it. And so it's part of the inquiry, and it seems psychological, but it has everything to do with waking up out of the trance. To recognize what were the messages we got on how we should be. You know, what have we internalized? What are we walking around with now that's kind of our standard to be okay? Am I doing enough? Am I special enough? How do I look? Am I generous enough? I mean, we have these spiritual standards. And then we begin to sense, you know, how much we do, how many moments of our life we're trying to in some way present ourselves to others so that they will like us and approve of us. How much of our lives is based on what other people think? It can be mind-blowing when we really register how many moments we're contriving our behavior and what we say and what we do in order that others will experience us a certain way. And then internally, okay, we have these standards and this fear of falling short, because it's the punishment for falling short is, you know, abandonment, annihilation, not belonging. It's pretty big. So we each have ways with our stories that we tell ourselves to try to work with that. One way is sometimes to try to reassure ourselves. I mean, we try to remind ourselves, oh, I got this done, I did that, I'll get that. You know, we do things to make ourselves feel okay. There's a cartoon I saw that has to do with, that says canine affirmation tapes. And you see this dog asleep with these headphones on, and it's saying, "Oh, you're such a good doggy. Oh, yes, aren't you a good dog? You definitely are a good, what a good dog," you know. So we do things to pump ourselves up and to try to compare ourselves favorably to other people and so on. We want to feel good about ourselves. We do a lot to try to feel good about ourselves in compared to this, you know, in relation to those standards. But as we know, most of the stories are fixating on the what's wrong. It's kind of this desperate thing of, if I know what's wrong, then I can try to fix it and I won't get slammed from the side without knowing it in some way. And we know that when we're caught in this basic sense of a flawed self, when we're really caught in that, none of the rational reminders about our goodness cut it, right? And when you really feel sunk in that sense of something's wrong, there's nothing makes it. There's this one, another cartoon this, underneath it had to do with self-esteem, and you see this guy journaling, and he says, "Dear diary, I'm sorry to bother you again." So the reason I'm going through this, just to kind of bring the trance right into our attention, is that a lot of our identity and our sense of what's going on is organized around our story about who I am, and that within that, that I'm falling short. And the Buddha described our fundamental suffering is that these stories obscure what's true. In the moment that we're playing a story of I'm not okay, we're not able to open to the awareness, to that luminous awareness that's here, and to that heart that's here, to the essential goodness that's here. And that's what's so sad, is that we spend so many moments telling ourselves stories, believing the stories, and in those moments not realizing and trusting what's true. So the path of transformation, of meditation, is to recognize that's going on, and then two things. To cease and desist running the stories. In other words, to let go of the story and open to the actual experience that lies under the stories in that moment. This is what I call self-forgiveness or self-compassion. To forgive means to let go, and what we're letting go of is the storyline, the blaming, I'm bad or you're bad. And what we're doing is opening to the rawness that's underneath it. See, our blaming of ourselves actually armors ourselves from the real vulnerability. Maybe as a way to, what we'll be doing is I'm going to invite you to kind of explore where this is alive in your own life. And just as a beginning in that, maybe to check in. And let's just let your attention go inward. We'll do what I call a forgiveness scan. And a forgiveness scan is really just to begin to recognize where we're at war. Any way that you're turned on yourself. And it might be just a sense today. If there's anything about today that you're carrying, where you feel like you fell short. For some of us, it can be overwhelming, just a really weighty sense of really not okay. But for many, we're preoccupied with other things, so it's more like an undercurrent, a kind of sour or weightiness that's undercurrent of where we weren't present for someone, or didn't do a good job at something, or didn't do our exercise, or something. Often it's how we caused injury. That we turn on ourselves because we feel that we've been hurtful to another person. Or we've been hurtful to ourselves. Just sense if, as you scan, there's any way in which you're being very unaccepting or unforgiving towards your own humanness right now. And if there is something where you're down on yourself, just to notice honestly how it feels. Just what's it like in your body? In your heart? Your mind. Just investigate a little. When you're down on yourself, and just let yourself sense it, when you're kind of telling yourself the story of falling short, where you've really let others down, where you're disappointing yourself in how you're doing your life. When you're in that, in the biochemistry of that, what's your sense of relatedness with others? Your sense of belonging or closeness like? When there's that sense of falling short, what's your capacity to enjoy beauty? to really listen to Mozart or birds or the wind, to see the silhouettes of the branches. The deepest question is really, when you're down on yourself, what's your quality of presence like? You might just sense, just inquire, how much of your life is contracted by some anxiety about imperfection? Where you're pulled away from presence. And whenever you'd like to open your eyes. So I just wanted to take a little time, a kind of a check-in, because for me, both in my own life and working with students and clients, it's been, there's a time when there's almost like this revelation of just how much our lives are in a kind of trance of not okay, and how much that influences everything. Everything. Living fully, loving fully. And then there's this good news with that, because if you can see it, if you can see it, if you can see the selfing, and that's another way the Buddhists call it, the I-ing and the my-ing. How much of the world's self-reference to what I'm not doing enough or what's wrong with me, if you can see it, you can begin to wake up from it and hold it with kindness, but not be so caught. So the good news is it's not the end of our evolutionary story to be caught in the bad self-trance. That we can, with self-compassion, open to a place of real deep inhabiting of our goodness. So, like the Buddha taught with the Noble Truths, we first see, okay, so here's the trance, here's where it's happening. And you might see it when you're meditating. It's really amazing to see the proliferation in a simple meditation. You can be sitting here tonight and feel like you're listening to my words, but you're really sleepy, and all you're really doing is sleeping, and then think to yourself, well, what a waste. My one class a week, and I'm just sleeping through it. And then, you know, it shouldn't be happening, and, you know, I'm just not a good meditator. And, you know, I do this through my life, the times that I really need to, and on, proliferation. Or maybe you are restless, and, you know, everybody else is sitting like a Buddha, nice and stuff, and I'm the one schlep here that's kind of just, you know. Or maybe it's obsessive thoughts. Maybe you sat here tonight and it didn't matter how much I said, just listen to the sounds. It's like you were just off planning next week's work presentation or weekend or whatever. On some level, the undercurrent, I'm not a good meditator. I'm not doing this right. How quickly it proliferates to some sinking feeling of a not okay self. Or maybe we experience some fear when we're meditating, some anxiety or and that happens in daily life. And there's the fear that's there, and then there's right on the, just immediately behind it, this kind of sense of, even if we note it and say, okay, fear, because this is the way we do it in Vipassana, we note things and say, okay, I'll be with this. There's still an undercurrent that it shouldn't be happening. It's not supposed to be there. That something's wrong with us for having fear. Investigate it. It's very interesting. I, for myself, you know, I've practiced a lot of years, and fear will come up, and I'll just, you know, I'll kind of, okay, let's be with this. But there's still some sense that it shouldn't be happening. Our physical pain. Notice the proliferation with physical pain. It's not simply twisting, burning, pressing, sore, aching. It unfolds into such a big story of, okay, what did I do to cause this, and how do I fix this? And is it, you know, I don't really know how to take care of myself well, and it shouldn't be happening. It's a sign that I'm deteriorating. And as many of you have known, because I've spoken, a good deal about my last bunch of months of being sick. Part of the proliferation for me has been, and I'm not handling this very well, I'm going around all, you know, self-absorbed and insensitive to my world. So all these layers get caked on to the simple arising of unpleasant. This is proliferation. It's also called papancha. That's the Pali word. And the proliferation goes right to this basic weightiness and solidness of bad self. So again, I'm just putting this out to go to explore for yourself. We certainly see it in the bigger sweeps of our life, this bad selfhood where we are not parenting right, or we're not creative or taking risks in work, or in some way not really being intimate or close with people around us. Jules Pfeiffer, he says, I grew up to have my father's looks, my father's speech patterns, my father's posture, my father's walk, my father's opinions, and my mother's contempt for my father. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a little bit of, okay, so there's this trance we get caught in. Let's explore now, what is it that loosens it? How do we start waking up to something larger? And again, you might sense in yourself, what's one place that's very hard to forgive? You know, just check in so that we can kind of, again, anchor this. What is some place, something in your behavior, either past or ongoing, that's hard to accept? Something that actually ends up giving rise to a sense of not good personhood, not liking yourself. And you might inquire, what stops me from accepting myself just as I am, from forgiving this, from really accepting the life that's going on right now as it is? What would be wrong with forgiving? There's a saying that everybody thinks forgiveness is a good idea until they really have something to forgive. So just to sense that. And you can keep on reflecting, but just to say that for so many of us, the fear of forgiving is that we'll just continue to be bad. We won't get better. Or that we really don't deserve to forgive ourselves. Or that there's really something wrong, and forgiving's like a lie. It's like saying it's not wrong. So just to say that a genuine forgiveness is in no way a kind of indulging. You know, there's this, some of you remember Deep Thoughts. There's this one that goes, the first thing was I learned to forgive myself. Then I told myself, go ahead and do whatever you want. It's okay by me. You know, so it's not that kind of indulgence. It's not a justifying or condoning. You can sense that you've caused harm and forgive. In other words, hold yourself with kindness and be absolutely committed to never doing it again. In fact, being committed to not only never doing, to doing whatever you can on this earth to help prevent that kind of violence. So forgiving is not condoning. It's a movement of the heart to hold with kindness what's here. Okay, I just want to make that clear. Carl Rogers, this is a quote that's really, I've found a lot in, says that it's not until we accept this ourselves in this life just as it is that we're free to change. I want to say that again. It's not until we accept or forgive this life right here, just as it is, that we're actually free to change. And what this says is that in spiritual life, acceptance and forgiveness is a precondition to continued transformation. Last week, some of you were here for the Nachiketa story, that the first of the gifts that he received on his path to transformation was forgiveness. It's not indulging. It's not condoning. It's opening our hearts to the humanness that's here. So one of the times I gave a forgiveness workshop, I did a day long in New York, and some of you might remember this, I shared it afterwards, that one of the men at the workshop, when I asked the question, what's unforgivable, and we did some sharing about what was unforgivable, and he described a story of some years back, that he had been taking care of a neighbor's, this young girl's, her cat. His responsibility was to take care of this young girl's cat while the girl and her family were away. And the cat started acting strange. And he was a little annoyed with the way it was acting. And kind of ignored it for a bit and then started getting very strange and slowing down and meowing loudly. So he took it to the vet and it was too late and the cat died. And the girl came home and was heartbroken. And so this man basically said to me, why should I forgive myself? It's not going to help the little girl. It's not going to help the cat. And to this day, I continue to be insensitive, not always paying attention to the people I love. Why should I forgive myself? Why should I make it easy on myself? Okay? So that's being caught in the trance. I am a bad person. I cause bad things to happen. So we did some work together, and the first question I asked him was, what would you have to feel if you stopped blaming yourself for the cat's death and the girl's heartbreak and for the way your relationships are with others right now? What would you have to do? And it took a while for him to, I said, just put down the story. What's there? What's the feeling that's lying underneath the story of your badness? Okay? And this is a question I'm going to ask you as the closing meditation, because this is when we want to start exploring forgiveness, we have to put aside the story of badness and feel what's here. And, the first feeling was shame, just this kind of raw, not okayness. And then underneath the shame was this incredible grief that he had for lost moments when he wasn't paying attention. All the lost moments where it could have been connection, it could have been love, but his habit of being preoccupied and inattentive took over. And he was weeping then. So what he did was he put aside the story of I'm bad, and underneath that, the grief that for whatever his conditioning, he lost moments of life. He lost love. For all of us, to the extent we have these self-blame and judgment, it's covering over some deep vulnerability. So for him, that was the angst that the judgment was covering, this grief of lost life. And underneath that, a caring about life. His blame was covering over his pure caring about life. It was covering over his goodness. Do you understand? This is the Buddha's teaching, that when we're in our story of what's wrong, we can't touch into where the tenderness is. We can't remember who we are. We can't remember our intrinsic caring. So for this man, when he could sense that grief about losing life, the pain of inattention, because it is pain to not be able to pay attention and connect, then he became compassionate towards himself. That was the moment things shifted. He could be compassionate towards himself, and he could begin to sense that who he was more the one who cared about connection than the story of a bad person. That is the intrinsic shift that happens with self-compassion. That instead of subscribing to this story of badness, we recognize the who we are as that field of awakeness and tenderness. That's more true than the story. And when that begins to happen and we get more familiar with that's what we are, our life changes. We never turn back. We might have waves of it, but we start to know more and more deeply that that wakefulness and tenderness is our nature. For this man, I got a letter about a month later, and he said that the people around him were commenting that he was just had become more sensitive and gentle. And he said, "I am softer. P.S. I just adopted a kitten." So I just thought I'd share that with you. Our self-blame separates us from what we are, and it separates us from each other. So the practice, over and over again, recognize when we're caught in the trance. Put down the thought of badness and open to where in the body we're feeling things with as much tenderness as we can. Rachel Naomi Remen says, "There are laws of our inner world that bind each of us as firmly as gravity. Beliefs and feelings we carry about ourselves and about life in general that we experience as true in all conditions and at all times. A feeling of personal unworthiness is one such inner law. One moment of unconditional love, of loving presence, may call into question a lifetime of feeling unworthy and invalidate it." Now, this is a powerful teaching. If you can see the trance, whether we receive that presence from another that really sees us truly, or we offer it to ourselves, we can cut through the conditioning and reconnect with what we are. It's not a one-shot. What happens is the conditioning's strong and we keep retelling ourselves the same old stories. It'll keep happening. It's amazing. Even when we're really getting more and more free and mature and at home with ourselves, it's amazing. It just kind of shoots on through again. You know, where we hear an old voice chiding ourselves or contemptuous or whatever it is, just keeps on happening. The difference? Lag time. Really. We don't believe it so much. The biochemistry doesn't kick in quite so intensely. We notice, oh, okay, the deficiency trance, the unworthiness trance. And then we say, okay, stop the storyline. Let's just come home to the feelings. And if we really come home to the feelings, like really feel the clutch, the grip, the pain, the ache, the vulnerability, we'll get compassionate. And then we'll realize we are that compassion. That's more who we are than the stories we were believing. So let me just say there are gifts, real treasures that come when we commit to non-proliferation, when we stop the war. And one gift is that when we're turned on ourselves, it takes a lot of energy. War is exhausting. We're closed down. Our attention's inward. We're not able to really enjoy our world. It's like Charlotte Joko Beck said, our failure to know joy is a direct reflection of our inability to forgive. That's compelling. Forgiving frees our heart. So that's one of the gifts, is aliveness. We get to enjoy more. The other gift of stopping the war, I mentioned earlier, is that as long as we're believing our stories, we can't directly realize our true nature. The stories obscure it. So as we begin to see them and let go, we begin to start inhabiting this open, mysterious, awareness. That's what we are. Read you, this is Mary Oliver. Still, what I want in my life is to be willing to be dazzled, to cast aside the weight of facts, and maybe even to float a little above this difficult world. I want to believe I am looking into the white fire of a great mystery. I want to believe that the imperfections are nothing, that the light is everything, that it is more than the sum of each flawed blossom rising and fading. And I do. I want to believe that the light is everything, that it is more than the sum of each flawed blossom rising and fading. And I do. As we begin to sense the human imperfections coming and going and really trusting what we are, we look at each other and that's what we see, that radiance, that mystery. Stopping the war within means that we absolutely sense our belonging to each other and dedicate ourselves to helping to bring peace to this earth. So I'd like to just invite you, we'll do a final meditation together, just exploring how, in whatever way, small or large, you can a little more stop the war inside your own heart and mind. And that'll be our closing meditation. So you might have a place as you sit here just to feel yourself in the here-ness first. Take a few full breaths. And let your senses be awake. Just feel that sincerity of, okay, right here. And you might notice if the inner weather is pleasant or unpleasant. You know, maybe there's some physical discomfort, restless, tired, maybe peaceful or easy. To just notice how it is and say yes to whatever's here. Just be here. So there's an honest presence. And then to let whatever place within you needs acceptance or forgiveness, whatever part of your life perhaps you're holding against in judgment or blame, if there's something like that, to let that be included in your attention right now. It might be a repeating way that you feel you hurt someone in your life or hurt yourself. Or it might be, as with that man, very distinctly a past experience that you're really just hard to accept that that's what happened. So what's unforgivable or unacceptable? And what would you have to feel if you let go of the story of blame? This is bad. I shouldn't. I'm bad. And just simply open to what the experience is in your heart, in your body. Offering space and kindness. Maybe it's grief. Maybe it's fear that things will get worse. Hopelessness. a lot of hurt. See if you can offer whatever is there. Maybe you're feeling numb, and that's okay too. This kind of unconditional presence, and if it helps to just put your hand on your own heart, just as a way of really offering a gesture of kind presence. For some, it helps just to mentally whisper what you're noticing. Sad, afraid, confused. There's a power to naming what's here, to breathing with the experience, to keep breathing, to saying yes to it, just to trust that if you offer your presence, even if there's numbness, maybe there's annoyance, maybe in some way just tightness, your only job right now is to notice what's going on and just breathe with it and feel it. Say yes to it. Just be the space of awareness and kindness that's noticing your experience. And if it's very painful, sometimes offering words to your own heart can be helpful. I'm sorry, I love you. Forgiven, forgiven. Notice what happens as you just have even the intention to offer kindness. Maybe you can't feel kindness, but let it be your intention to offer kindness to the place that's vulnerable. And notice what happens. It's my intention to forgive, to hold this heart with kindness. The poet Rumi says, I must have been incredibly simple or drunk or insane to sneak into my own house and steal money, to climb over the fence and take my own vegetables, but no more. I've gotten free of that ignorant fist that was pinching and twisting my secret self. The universe and the light of the stars come through me. I am the crescent moon put up over the gate to the festival. In the moment of feeling what's here and offering forgiveness, we become that vast forgiving space of heart, that luminous awareness that's our true home. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.